Flames fans, it's time for Flames Unfiltered, your spot for Calgary Flames hockey talk.
Leeds going into the third period, two straight games, and the Flames drop them both. Not a good week. Good evening and welcome to another edition of Flames Unfiltered, hosted by Brad Brood and Kyle Lewis. Kyle, not a good night last night. Not good at all.
No, it was awful. I don't want to be that guy. We just talked about this a few minutes ago. I don't want to be that guy that gets too down in the dumps, but it was very, very frustrating to watch.
How was your Halloween?
Good. Quiet. Actually, not a lot of kids. Only like 20 yourself.
The weather was really nice here. Actually really, really nice. And I probably had 65.
Wow. That's a good amount.
Yeah, probably about that. Zero kids dressed as hockey players. Is that not a thing anymore? I didn't see any football players. I didn't see any baseball players. I didn't see any hockey players. I don't know.
What is this world coming to? I don't know. Who do kids look up to these days? I don't know. It's not sports figures anymore?
I don't know who they look up to anymore. I don't think I want to know, to be honest with you.
Well, I don't think I do either, but based on this past week, it wouldn't be any members of the Calgary Flames, I don't think.
I doubt it. It'd be tough to pick a jersey, wouldn't it? I saw some of the Halloween costumes for the Flames players. I got a kick out of two.
Those
of
were
them.
Good. Those were good, actually.
I liked Michael Backlund's Below Deck one. I don't know if you watched that show ever, but I thought that was funny. I thought Markstrom's electrical outlet was pretty funny too. So
yeah, the whole team looked pretty good. They definitely the highlight of the week so far in Flames land.
You know, Kyle, I'm gonna do something crazy tonight. After we get done recording, I got invited to play sled hockey.
Have you ever done that?
No, I haven't. But I'm going to. I have two friends that have children with various different disabilities, and we have a program at our hockey arena that is wonderful, and it allows them to do play sled hockey, and it also has them to, you know, we have all kinds of sports for them, whether it's hunting to fishing to baseball to, I mean, we just have a great program for these kids, so they're not left out. And there's a group of guys, a group of dads, and two players on the U.S. Olympic team that live here, and they put together this Wednesday night late night group that plays sled hockey, and I was invited to come tonight, and I'm going to try it. I have no idea how it's going to go. So
I got a pretty good guess. I think you're going to the good news is I think you're going to have fun.
The bad news is I think I'm going to be really sore tomorrow.
Actually, I was just thinking you're going to be terrible at it, but you'll likely be sore too. That's a sport that I don't think people realize how difficult it is. It's the hand eye that would take. Like, I don't know. You're working out for you, my friend.
And I'm worried too, because it was quite some time ago now. I was at a youth hockey tournament with my son, and I was talking to a true sled hockey game going on before his regular hockey game. And I talked to one of the kids when they came off the ice, and he was showing me all the cuts they get on their arm from the pointy things that they dig in, you know, and you gotta, he said people jab each other with it. I'm like, son of, nobody better jab me tonight and cut me open. Be pissed. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun, but, that is something next week. I'll report back and let you know what the damage was, because I got a feeling there's probably going to be some.
You can let our listeners know. I suspect you're going to be texting me later tonight.
You'll be sleeping, but you will get a text probably late tonight, and you'll wake up to some comedy tomorrow morning.
I'll be doing the solo next week because you'll be on the IR.
Jeez, I better not get that hurt. Holy crap! If I'm on the IR for or I can't talk about hockey for an hour, I'm in big trouble. Today on the show, we're going to recap round two of the Battle of Alberta, and then we will talk about the Seattle Kraken coming to Calgary and how great that went. And then we'll touch on some Flame news, touch about Markstrom and his Oilers curse. We'll talk about chemistry questions and a whole bunch of things and prepare for a busy four-week set this week as the Flame schedule gets rocking and rolling. Thanks for joining us on another edition of Flames Unfiltered. All right, Kyle. I know you're dying to talk about last night, but first let's discuss the Battle of Alberta. And that did not go very well at all either.
No. Markstrom was quite good up until that winning goal, unfortunately. Things happen in hockey, though.
Let's talk about that a little bit. I've been worried about this curse, and I worried about it all summer. And then he didn't get the start, and I thought, I probably would have started him myself. Didn't hate the decision, though. Now he plays, and I was super, super impressed with him through all of the game except for when he goes out of his net. I don't understand.
That's a tough one to watch, but I don't think too many people had done this, but I really hope that they didn't anyway, but it's really hard to hang that on Markstrom. That's just a really shitty play that happens. I agree he shouldn't have left, the net as he did, but goalies will do that by times. And apart from that gaffe, which unfortunately cost him the game, he was really good.
He was really good. And I felt bad for him because he did, to my opinion, squash any worries I really had about it. The only thing is, I don't have a problem with him leaving the crease. I understand that is an instruction from the team that they want him to be playing those and cutting those off. My problem is that he got back. It was just a flat out bad angle shot that got over his shoulder.
I just don't think he was set, at least mentally, right?
Yeah.
He just got wandering, and it's really crappy it happened the way it did, because otherwise that game probably goes to overtime. Maybe shoot it with 1 point. We're probably talking less about it, but I do think that he put fears of that curse to rest. Mind you, I'll be very curious how he plays against them on the 27th when I suspect they get the start, 27th of December, that
is. Do you think he gets a start?
I don't see why he wouldn't,
I would. I would start him.
Yeah, give him another crack at it. He proved he can hang with them. Now he's got to prove he can beat them.
I saw an interesting stat. He is 7, and in the last 2 years against the Oilers, he's 7 wins, 11 losses, a .874 save percentage, and a .511 goals against.
Gross.
That's in the goals against is a .511 in the last 6 games. Against other teams, he's 61-30 with a .92.
Yeah, that's a little different, eh? How's that for contrast? Man. That's tough. But again, I think it was a step in the right direction. And I'm probably trying to be optimistic after a couple of games that left me anything but optimistic. But I think he gets that start in December. And because to me, again, he proved that he can play against him and play well. But I think if you go back to Vladar, it's like, did that winning goal get in his head? I mean, the chatter kind of starts again, right? So, and he's your guy. At the end of the day, he's your guy.
You have to play him. You have to play him just because he is your starting goalie. You have to play him against the Edmonton Oilers. And I will talk to you about another fear from that game that I had is, I thought we contained Connor McDavid pretty good. But the more I watch Connor McDavid, the more I'm accepting the fact that this guy can literally change a game in mere seconds. He is that dominant.
He's the only guy in the league currently that I think can do that. MacKinnon would be pretty damn close. With his foot speed, there's times he's done it, but
yes,
he doesn't do it with the regularity of McDavid in my mind.
I would probably pick, we've had this discussion on the show the first 3 years of his existence, and I always said that I would pick MacKinnon over McDavid if I was building a team.
Yeah.
And I think I would stand behind that still to this day. But as far as a game breaker, where every time he touches the puck, you're like, oh, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
I would point to McDavid.
I think I've got a good analogy to sum up how I feel about it, which is very similar to what you said. You're always aware when MacKinnon is on the ice, but I think you're always nervous when McDavid's on the ice.
Yeah. Very good.
It's just that little notch extra, and like you said, seconds. Like it's just, oh god, here we go. You know, like he just creates something out of nothing in a way that I don't think any other player right now really does.
Were you waiting for Evander Kane to make more of an impact on Saturday night? Because I was. I felt like he was right there, and like it was going to happen, and it just wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I think so. Like I actually, him and Kadri both like. In terms of like, I keep expecting them to get into it somehow, and there's just like little squabbles here and there, but like nothing to speak of. Kane's a bit of a sleepy player sometimes. Like he's quite skilled.
He's usually
in the guts of the game too. Like as much as I don't care for him as a human being, if I can say that,
I'll say it straight up. I don't like him at all as a human being.
I think he's arrogant and he's self-serving and he's all those things you don't like in a hockey player, but he's still very skilled and. A very effective player, but yeah, he didn't really stand out to me. I was a little bit worried about him in these Calgary Edmonton games this year, but so far he hasn't been much of a factor.
You know, there's certain players in the league, and maybe you'll think I'm crazy on this, but...
I already do, so don't worry about it.
Yeah. Fair enough. There's certain group of players in the league, and there's not very many of them now. There used to be a whole hell of a lot more. And in a weird way, I probably would have put Kadri in this list too. Like maybe Kadri pre-Colorado, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Guys where you not only fear that they could take the puck and go down and change a game with a play, but guys that you don't know when they're going to snap and do something outrageous and injure somebody too.
That's fair. And I actually knew exactly what you meant when you talk about Kadri pre-Colorado.
Marchand does that to me too. Radko.
Yeah, Marchand too. Marchand is going to annoy you. I don't find him quite as dangerous. Well, he's still on that spectrum, but
his slew footing is dangerous to me.
That's fair. But I haven't seen an example of that from
him
in a
while. He hasn't for a
now.
Long time now. He hasn't.
Well, of course, he hasn't played in a while now either, right?
Yeah. Radko Gudas is another player that comes to mind where I worry when he's on ice. I'm like, oh, what's going to happen? You know, Tom Wilson, another one.
I hate Tom Wilson, yeah. Actually, fun fact, Brad Marchand bought me a sub once. Should point that out.
Really?
Yeah, he played junior here, and he's in front of me in line at Subway. I was, I don't know, 16 or something. And yeah, he's actually a super nice guy. His family, of course, is in the Halifax area. And he is not at all as much of a douchebag as people want to believe he is, but... Sorry to break the news.
That's all right. I'm still going to hate him until I meet him, all right?
Oh, absolutely. I don't blame you a bit.
What else stood out to you in this Edmonton-Calgary battle?
Kadri was, as he often is, the best player, but by far too wide of a margin. As much as I love his play, I find it concerning that he's so far ahead of everybody else on most shifts. Other than that, like I find the intensity's lacking a bit. I would have thought after a play, I guess part of it is that playoff series didn't go as long as I said before as I felt it should have. So the Battle of Alberta is great because both teams are good.
It's been blah this year.
It really has, and you mentioned it before. Like there's no fight. There's no, not that we need it, but like the checking hasn't been.
I mean, there hasn't even been the odd scrums in front of the net. And for God's sakes, if you're engaged in the game, you're going to have those. And we haven't even got those. So I don't know. I don't know. It just was the both games were different. It was just different.
Well, and Tkachuk being gone is a big part of that too. And actually Cassian being gone too, is as much as I don't care for him either as a player, like those are, having those two guys out of the battle means that a couple other guys at some point you would think would step up, but that's hard to do when you only play each other three times a year and not once in the new year like we talked about before.
Yeah. What did you think? I've been dying to ask you this. Well, how hard did you laugh when you listened to Daryl Sutter's post-game comments?
Oh, yeah. Half the time I laugh, the other half the time I just drop my head and shake my head back and forth. I'm just like, oh my God, like, how does he come up with this stuff?
If you're a listener, I'm sure you all have heard, but I will say what he said, because if someone is listening to the podcast and didn't hear the post game, Daryl Sutter was asked why Jonathan Huberdeau was not on the bench for part of the first period. And he...
That's a Freudian slip.
Yeah, no kidding. And without even cracking a smile, any facial expression whatsoever, he said, I think he had to go take a shit.
He actually, his expression was the expression of someone who probably has to take a shit. For being perfectly honest here.
But you know, like, what
I thought? That little furl in his head. In his face, you know?
Did you think it was weird that just everybody, I mean, I don't know what the hell I would ask after that. Nothing.
You know what? Based on, like, I don't know, not to get into big analysis of bowel movements here, but like I saw Herbert like kind of like favoring his leg a little bit, like, you know, skating around a little bit, like gingerly. And it's like, okay, like maybe he tweaked something. So I kind of get the sense Sutter said that just to be like, he's fine.
Yeah.
I don't think that was actually the case, but it was a great way to shut down the conversation.
Well, it shut down everybody. Nobody talked anything about an injury, but I heard him talking on 960 the next morning that after he came back, he took a little lap in front of the bench, like, and looked like he was testing his leg. You don't test your leg after a shit.
No, sometimes your leg goes during just to get going, you know?
You know what?
That's what my dog does anyway.
You know, I just don't understand. So I think he's just clever.
I'm a little worried because you and I had agreed before, just based on how things have been, that we would use a little bit less of a structure. And look where it's taken us.
I know. We should have a little more structure in the show.
I enjoyed it. Hopefully listeners are too.
Talking about shits. But I don't know. You know, I was pissed after that game on Saturday night. And when Daryl Sutter said that, I started laughing out loud and I was in a good mood the rest of the night as I got ready for bed. And I was like, oh, man. Well, let's end the good moods. Let's talk Seattle coming to town last night. Adam Ruziska's first game of the year. What was your thoughts?
He was decent. He looked a little rusty, but I didn't mind putting him in. I didn't think
Kevin Rooney deserved to come out.
Yeah, I don't know that Rooney deserved to come out.
No, I don't agree.
I think who does deserve to come out after that game, and he's on the second line right now for some reason. That's number 17, Mr. Lucic. Oh, Lord.
Why is it, and we're going off the rails here, and that's okay. Why is it that Lucic seems to me to get free passes all the time from the coach, the media, and the fan base? Why is it?
I don't know, but it's extremely frustrating. I mean, some people will say, and they're not wrong, that it's not his fault he's miscast by getting elevated minutes with more skilled line mates, and I understand
that. It's not his fault that he got put on the second line, but why do we keep doing this? Like,
has he done to deserve to be there, apart from absolutely nothing? He was good on that fourth line. I don't know why they broke that line up.
You know, and another thing I don't understand, he goes out and hits three people in one shift last night, which was great. But they showed more highlights of that than they do good plays or good back checks or good, you know, he went and hit Eberle. He went and hit, I don't know. He frustrates me. He's slow. He's out of the play. And you know what? He's still good on this team in the right slot on the left wing on the fourth line.
Yeah, exactly. I don't understand why, if you're trying to spark offense amongst struggling offensive players, like, you know, Jonathan Huberdeau, just an example, you don't put a guy like Lucci with them. You just don't.
Yeah. How do you feel if you're a Lindholm? It's like, oh, man, I'm in a slump. Look at the line chart, and you're like, Oh, well, this will really help. I got Lucic on the right, left side of me.
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense.
No.
Very, 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 very frustrating. And then to see the Lions again at practice this morning, to see it's the same thing. It's like, what are you doing?
And you know what? Like, I am usually, I gotta preface this, cause like me and you used to bitch all the time about Jeff Ward.
Mm-hmm.
And his blender he had out every single game. I called it the mid first period panic. And
yeah, accurate.
And you know, and I'm not, and I respect the hell out of Sutter for Lions are Lions that are Lions, and we're gonna work with it for multiple games before we know if it works.
Yeah.
But I've watched this team and I've coached enough to know that that isn't the solution. And I think Daryl Sutter knows that. I'm not sure what he's trying to do. He's way smarter than we are in this whole coaching game. But I'm a little puzzled. And why do I feel like tomorrow night, and I might be completely wrong, why do I feel like tomorrow night Lions go back?
I don't really know why you feel that way. Because
you don't?
You mean like a mid-game change?
No, I think Lions go back tomorrow night starting out. Lindholm, Huberto, Toffoli, Kadri, Mangiapane, Dubé. I don't know.
I feel like he saw enough in the first games to know what he didn't like. Unfortunately, in so doing, he's taken apart what he probably did like and what was working, i.e. second line, fourth line. So I don't know. I think he's the kind of guy that sticks to his guns. So he tried what he tried for the first, seven games. Didn't really get the best results, so I think he's going to try this for a few more games, and then
if
last night's any indication, it's going to change again.
Like, I wouldn't, this chemistry has been questioned, and I'm not so sure, like I don't necessarily hate Kadri, Huberto, Mangiapane, but then if I was going to do that, I'm okay with that, but if I was going to do that, I'd go Lindholm to Foley and probably Dubé on the left side. And then move Trevor Lewis up with Backlund and Coleman like he should be, and Lucic back with Rosiska / Rooney and Richie. Like, I could see shuffling the top six. But why are you screwing with our third and fourth line?
That's exactly my point. That's why I don't understand why Kevin Rooney came out and Milan Lucic went up the lineup.
I think Rooney came out simply because they had to get Rosiska a game. Like, I believe that. And I'm fine.
I do, too. Plug that back in. He's not the one that should have come out.
But if Ruziska's going to come in as a center, who's he going to take? I agree. It should be Lucic. And then...
Well, a couple of those guys can play. You know, Ruziska could have come in on the left wing.
Yeah.
Lewis can play center or wing. Like, there's different ways they could have configured it.
Yeah.
I just think, and I'm not saying it's ideal, I just think if it really, truly is a meritocracy, which clearly at this point it isn't, because if it were, Lucic would not be playing tomorrow night. He likely wouldn't have been playing last night. Maybe, but he had a terrible, terrible game, and there has to be consequences for that. Like I've said before, if you compare this to any other sport, any other workplace, there needs to be consequences for poor actions or inaction, and he should be out of the lineup. So I agree to get, Rzeszkin was important. I'd like to see him again because I think he's a good player, but I guess I'm going back to your previous point. I'm just getting frustrated with Lucic again.
No, I'm with you. I saw, okay, now bear with me, Kyle. This was from a source I wouldn't consider credible. I'm not even kidding. I clipped it and I put it on my headline here to stuff to talk about tonight. I saw on I'll name the site. I don't think there's any truth to this. DailyHive.com, which you get where I'm coming from here. Says Flames are discussing signing Milan Lucic to a contract extension.
Oh, I did see that. I think I ignored it and just suppressed the fact that I saw it. But yeah, I did see that.
Does that not make you just kind of vomit in your mouth a little bit? Like, we're finally getting rid of this. I'm not ripping on him. I'm saying we're finally getting rid of this bad contract. And what would you re-sign him at? You'd have to I can find a league minimum guy to do that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, he still has a presence. If you can sign him to a league minimum deal, I don't have an issue with that.
But you think he would do that, though?
No, but I could live with it. It wouldn't bother me.
No, but do...
But what bothers me is that he would get more than league minimum, and he'd probably get maybe a couple of years out of them. And a guy like Michael Stone can't get above league minimum and has to wait till last day of training camp to get signed. Actually, after training camp, excuse me, to get signed.
All right, I'm gonna have. Please don't take away the fan club membership on me here. I thought Michael Stone was junk last night.
I agree, he was. Most of the team was. Who played well last night?
Oh, let me pull up my depth chart here and tell you.
You have to pull up a lot more than that. Grab a bottle of whiskey and start drinking and try to convince me.
I did not. Oh. I'm going to tell you the guys I didn't think were horrible, okay?
That's the gold bar right now, gold standard.
I didn't think Mangiapane was horrible.
He was quick.
I did not mind Toffoli. He got his 400th point. That has nothing to do with why I said that. I thought Toffoli was our best player last night.
Yep.
I did not hate Michael Backlund last night. I did not hate Blake Coleman last night.
I don't think there's ever been a game where I can say I've hated Blake Coleman, to be fair.
On defense, I did not hate Noah Hanifin last night. Yeah. I hated a lot of the other ones, though. And I hate to say this, and I tweeted it last night. Does Mackenzie Weegar look out of position?
Yeah, but that's also because I don't like defensemen playing their offside unless it's on the power play. I've never been a fan of that. Offensively, he's picking his spots decently, but defensively, I find he's a little lost.
And I'm not. I hope people aren't thinking that I'm not like a Mackenzie Weegar fan and I don't want him. I think he's going to be great for this team. But there was a couple times last night I was like, who was the other defenseman and why is there an odd man rush and what happened to create this? And it happened to be 52 a couple times. And I'm like, why? What's going on here? You know. And I thought Michael.
I think he and Huberto are having a much harder time acclimatizing to this team and this system than people would have imagined. A much harder time.
What do we expect, though?
Well,
our expectations is too high?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I saw a few comments about this that really make a lot of sense. I mean, let's start with Huberto. You know, the biggest name that they acquired in the offseason, arguably. Kadri's up there, too. But anyway, everybody just seemed to think that because Huberto and Gaudreau had the same amount of points that you could just replace one with the other, and they're not the same player at all. Gaudreau's skating ability is off the charts. He has some of that McDavid element of creating something out of nothing. Huberto's a lot more methodical. You know, he's extremely good along the boards, but he's not that guy that's just typically going to create a crazy scoring chance out of nothing at all. So I think some of those comparisons are unfair. As far as Weegar goes, everybody was making like the Mark Giordano comparisons, long road to the NHL, really good at everything. And those things are all still true. But to your point, I'm not shitting on Mackenzie Weegar either. But people just treated these guys like they're going to be plug and play. They're in a different conference. They're both with the Panthers their entire careers. They're with a different coach with an entirely different system. Every single thing about this is completely different. The only thing that's the same are their jersey numbers, and it's still the same sport. That's it. So now I'm going to jump a little bit further into this just by saying that, and I think it was Kent Wilson, who's obviously a pretty well-known writer in the Flames community, and he said like the first 10 games of the season are essentially meaningless in a lot of ways. So people freaking out about the Leafs or Canucks fans freaking out about their team or us, you know, debating the Flames right now, there's still merit in the discussions, but Huberto and Weegar, like, we're not going to know for another 15 games how they fit with this team and what they're really capable of.
The sample size is tiny, and yeah, I know extremely. There's a lot. Like I don't have really any panic on Mackenzie Weegar, to be honest with you. And I honestly don't with Jonathan Huberto. I know a lot of the fan base is like ready to climb up a tree and jump off because they think Jonathan Huberto should be over a point a game player. And you know what? The thing is, I'll make a prediction. By the time we get to episode 200 of this show, And I think that we'll love Jonathan Huberto more than we love Johnny Gaudreau because I think he brings a more complete aspect. And I think he can win and maybe in the tough situations. So I guess only time will tell there. But we're jumping way, way ahead of ourselves here by Boohoo and a guy that's in game two. eight of a 8-year contract. If you think about that.
And we're putting in a ton 5-1 now they've hit a little bit of a slump, and yeah, like exactly what you said, 8 games, like.
And we're putting a ton of pressure on this guy all of a sudden. This freaking fan base. Yeah, he went from
Florida, where nobody gives a shit about hockey, South Florida, I should clarify, you know, Sunrise, to a hockey mad market. That in itself, never mind, you know, the new systems and coaching and all the different stuff, new line mates, new team, different conference. Just the fact he's gone from a place where nobody really cares to a place where everybody cares, the mental part of that's going to be hard. As much as he enjoys it and wants that, like any, I think any competitive hockey player would, that's another big adjustment.
Did you think that we had the game in control last night when we went up 4-2?
Yeah, when Lewis scored on a, like I said to you last night, a shot I didn't think he was capable of. It was a really nice shot. I figured that was it. I'd be able to watch the rest of the game in peace and go to bed, and the exact opposite happened. And how it fell apart. There was less structure in that than there was in the pickup game I played last night.
Breakaways and giveaways happen on a power play once in a while.
Sure.
But our power play last night could not get anything going. And I'll give credit to Seattle. That's a much better, much harder working team than I saw last year out of Seattle.
Yep, agreed.
Did you think that I think Morgan Geeky is a great hockey player, and I could not believe how good Matty Berniers looked. I was shocked. I was shocked.
Yeah, that team's getting better faster than a lot of people would have thought. They drafted really well. They got some really good young players. And like Yanni Gourde, you know, he had a whale of a game. He was really good too. Like, and this is another point of contention. I wanted to talk about this at some point. Like, I'm getting really tired of people talking about the teams you should beat or the points that you should have. That doesn't exist.
It's the National Hockey League.
Well, the parity in the league is off the charts. I mean, the Sabres are much better than a lot of people thought they'd be. The Bruins, the 9-1, and without Marchand, who the hell saw that coming? Like, just this notion that, oh, you know, that's a very winnable game. Well, they're all winnable games, and they're all losable games. Like, it's not unthinkable that, you know, Seattle beat Calgary. It's really shitty how it happened, and it should not have happened. But, you know, Seattle capitalized on their chances. The other thing that kind of frustrated me, like, on Twitter today is that people were pointing towards Dan Vladar's stats.
Oh, God.
I can't think of a single goal that Dan Vladar is to blame for last night.
I got a text message from a Vancouver Canuck friend of mine. I told you I have a lot of those, which is probably poor picking of friends. But he says to me something about some smart-ass remark about Vladar. And I, just fired him back. I'm like, hello, you obviously did not watch the game.
Clearly not. Didn't even watch the highlights, evidently.
And I text him back. I'm like, you know, your team's got nice jerseys tonight, but you got your own problems, and you better watch your own goalie. I mean, yeah. I can't put anything on Vladar at all. As a matter of fact, if I was Vladar, I'd have went into the locker room after the game, and I'd have freaking been pissed off.
Absolutely, with a good reason. It's a frustrating one.
So let's talk a little bit about the schedule. And we've been at home for so long. And I'm not going to lie. During the middle of the first period last night, it was sloppy, bad hockey. And all I could think of was, this team needs a road trip. It's just they need to go on the road.
You tweeted that, and I liked it, because I think you're right.
And you could just tell by the way, just mannerisms and everything. It's just like, we just need to go on the road. And we still have two more at home here still. And we went from first to fifth in the standings just like that. And I don't know. I think it's crazy that people are panicking and stuff like that. I mean, it's just going to take some time. It's going to take some time.
Well, the core of this team has completely changed more so than any other team in the league over the course of one summer.
Yeah.
Monahan, Gaudreau, Tkachuk are, you know, at one point our three best players by most, you know, or at least three best forwards at one point are all gone. So this adjustment period is probably longer for the Flames, or should be in theory, than probably any other team in the league.
Yeah.
So hang on. We could, you know, I suspect next week, hopefully we're still talking about some wins, but they might be 6-4 wins or, you know, things that were not the best Daryl Sutter type hockey, but we got some frustration ahead to try to work these bugs out.
Do you fear allowing more goals than we traditionally allow as a problem, or do you fear scoring struggles as a problem more?
Absolutely, scoring struggles, like no question at all. What's your answer to that?
I'm an ass. I hate them both. They both scare the shit out of me. But I would have to say probably scoring troubles, because I don't want to be the Edmonton where we score our way out of defensive crappiness. But
no, definitely not.
But and I don't expect this team to put up goals like the Oilers do. We're not built that way. But we have to have our top two lines producing like top two lines. And one thing, and I want to get your take on this, one thing that pisses me off is that this fan base is so enamored with having a captain, which drives me insane. And we're also so enamored with clarifying what line or classifying which pairing or which groups are line one. They're line one and this is line two. Like, do you care? Call them what you freaking want. I don't care. I call it the Kadri line and the Lindholm line, the Backlund line and the Rooney line. They all have a place. Why are we worried about first line?
Well, I think part of that is because traditionally it was, you know, like teams had a top line. They had a very clearly defined fourth line that had enforcers and stuff. So I think that's some old school thinking there. But
I call it top six, bottom six.
Yeah. But I think part of it is like we don't have any top lines right now because we had a top line, but we have a line that's performing really, really well. And we kind of have that with the second line. But the numbering of it, like I understand the frustration of that because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But people like they get in like last year, but you see the media all the time. So Gaudreau, Tkachuk, and Lindholm, the top scoring line in the league. Right? Like just on an absolute tear. So people get fixed on that. Oh, it's the top line. It was the top line in hockey. It's like, okay, so that just feeds into that whole thinking, right?
I know. When I always look at rosters, like I want our top two lines to be producing, so I don't even have to worry about calling them one or two. Just want them to produce.
Well, that's what we all want, you know. But I mean, I think part of the frustration with it is what's going on right now. There's like none of the lines just in the last two games, and of course both losses, but they just haven't been good. And if people want to keep going on about top line when we have three or four lines that are playing well, you know, then I'll be more apt to be more frustrated with that way of thinking.
How would you, if you could set the lineup tomorrow night for the team? And I'm not talking defense. I think we know what we'd all do there. But what would you do for the forward lines?
There's so many options. I'm kind of in blunder mode right now because nothing has really worked. I'd want to do Huberto, Lindholm, Mangiapane. That's which I said during training camp. That was kind of my thinking of a really good line.
I don't mind that.
I think it's going to happen at some point. I think at least as an attempt.
So then who would you put? See, I think Kadri, Toffoli, Dubé would be a strong second line.
But that's exactly what I'm thinking. Because the other two lines were pretty damn good. So then you go Coleman, Backlund, Lewis.
Perfect. Love that line. Then, love it.
Yeah, and then you're back to your fourth line of Lucic, maybe Sidham and Trzeba in that spot. Rooney and Richie. And Richie's been pretty good this year. I'm not a Richie fan at all, but he's been really good this year.
I would love to try that. I don't like Lindholm with Toffoli. And you want to know why I don't?
No, I don't either.
I think both those guys are trigger men. And you're going to depend on Milan Lucic to get him the puck?
Oh, let's just not go back down that road right now. It's too frustrating.
I mean,
you're absolutely right.
I mean, those guys are not going to produce. Cause, I mean, you have to have Huberdeau with Lindholm and Toffoli. or you have to have, I mean, you have to have someone, you know, somebody up there to get the puck to them.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Lindholm's going to come out of this. Are you worried about Lindholm? Because we talked about Huberdeau's worries. We talked about, are you worried about Lindholm?
No, he's too good to worry about, but I think he needs a bit more help. I mean, he had two exceptional wingers before. Now he's got one who isn't at his usual exceptional pace because he's still getting used to where he's at. And then, like you said, I agree with you about the Toffoli thing. Like, Toffoli is, they get two right shots in that line, and they both like to shoot. Lindholm is probably the best shooter on the team. Get him the puck, let him shoot it. I think Mangiapane would be a better fit alongside him, largely because Mangiapane has the type of speed that Gaudreau had. He'll get to those loose pucks. He's skilled enough, he'll make plays, maybe to Huberdeau, who's got a bit of patience and some time. Gets it to Lindholm between the circles, where we've seen, you know, so many times before. Like, Lindholm is not being fed the puck the way he's used to being fed the puck.
No.
At all. He's probably doing too much work right now. And as a center, typically there's more work involved. But in this case, like, I feel like he's a little overburdened compared to what he's used to.
Tanev doesn't practice today. Are you worried there's an injury or just a maintenance
day? Yeah, it's a maintenance day. Tanev is Tanev. He's an absolute rock. And I think after the last couple games, like, it's just, you know what? You can have the morning off. You typically deserve it. The other guys, not so much.
You know what I would have done last night after the game if I was the coaching staff? I'd have walked into the room.
I can think of a few things, but go ahead.
I'd have walked into the room and said, all right, garbage can that. We're out of here. I don't even want to see you tomorrow. Show up for morning skate on Thursday. And I would have went back to the old Lions on Thursday morning and said, it got us to 5-1. Let's go. Come on, guys. You got it. That's what I would.
Yeah, I agree. I think a little bit of overhandling there in terms of, like, just practice and just this whole business as usual thing. The business as usual mentality, much like the length of this homestand, it's stale, you know? They're just going through the motions. They're not playing well. They're not, like, yeah, I would, it's almost like being passive aggressive. You're just sending a message. You know what? Fuck it. This game was a disaster. Don't bother coming to the rink tomorrow. Let's reconvene Thursday for morning skate. Everybody, you know, think about the last couple of games, what you want to do differently, and we'll reconvene.
Yeah, no, I agree. And this team needs a roadie. They need a roadie, and we're going to talk about that next on the show.
Get all your Flames Unfiltered podcasts, team news, team updates, and highlights at flamesunfiltered.com.
Two more games at home before we get to get on the road. It starts Thursday night as Nashville comes to town. Nashville currently seventh in the Central Division, losers of two straight. Got thumped by Edmonton last night. First of three means between the two teams. Your thoughts on Nashville coming to town?
Yeah. Nashville's kind of a transition team. Like, they're good, they're not great. It's probably the kind of opponent that you want right now. I mean, again, there's enough parity in the league, it's going to be a challenge, but I mean, they're not world beaters here, right? It's not like it's Colorado rolling in again.
Definitely not a team I want to lose to.
No, and a team that's based on their position in the standings and where Calgary is expected to be, that's an opportunity to be a good statement game. Yes. I think it's going to be a little bit understated. Like, I believe the Flames are going to come away with 2 points, but I think it's going to be like a 2-1 or a 3-2 kind of game. They're not going to come out, win, you know, 6-0 and then start rolling from there. Like, this is going to take some time.
I do think Nashville may see a very pissed off Calgary team.
They should. They absolutely should. They should be. And Zadorov's comments, you know, this morning about, you know, not being a young team and being better than what they are. Like, I hope that resonates with everyone because they should be very fired up. But whether or not that's the case, we'll see. They sure as hell weren't fired up last night, so we'll see if that was enough to push them over the edge.
True. Saturday night, the New Jersey Devils come to town, a team that is shocking me this year as I had written them off, and they sit first in the Metro, 7-3 record, winners of four straight. This is the final game of the 8-game homestand and 9 out of 10 at home, and I can't wait to get on the road, but this game, it's going to be a tough measuring stick. New Jersey plays the Edmonton Oilers on Thursday night, which I'm going to definitely watch because I think that's going to be a good game too. But I don't know. This New Jersey team has shocked the heck out of me.
So why have they shocked you? What are they doing that you didn't think they'd do? Are they scoring more as a goaltender than you expected?
Jesper Bratt, I mean, seriously, he's producing like crazy. They're playing. Yeah. It's a whole team effort. They're coming at waves. I mean, they're just playing good, structured hockey. And I've only got to see a couple of their games, maybe like a game and a half this year, and I've been like, whoa, I did not see this coming. I didn't think they had the personnel to be this successful. I didn't.
I thought they'd be a playoff tweener. I didn't expect this kind of a start. But I mean, there's also a lot to be said for how interesting and unusual interconference games can be. So I don't think that game's going to be particularly indicative of the Flames or the Devils in terms of what they're really like. But it's going to be much more of a challenge, I would think, anyway, than the Nashville game. But I would have thought Seattle wouldn't have been that bad either.
Yeah, it's funny. Then the Flames will hop on an airplane Sunday and got games Monday and Tuesday. Monday night they are on the island playing the New York Islanders, who are fifth in the Metro, and then have the second game against the New Jersey Devils just one night later. The first back-to-back of the year for the Flames as they play again Tuesday night to wrap up their season series with the New Jersey Devils, and probably not the time you want to be playing the Devils twice when they're clicking on all cylinders at the moment here. So, interesting schedule.
Well, we gotta get the schedule rolling, though, too, right? Like we talked about, these games have been pretty spread out. October was a really light schedule. I mean, November's much, much busier for the Flames, and you got to think that's going to be a good thing. Try to get in some kind of a rhythm here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been two games. I think they said two games and nine nights, and not enough. And now we're going to get it. We're pretty much back-to-back and games here for November, and finally we get to go on the road. And I think a trip out east is exactly what the doctor ordered for this team, and usually you don't say that on these eastern trips. Usually they're the dreaded trips out east, but I really do think it'll be good for this team. I don't think long home stands at any point in the season are great, and I think the team has played fine thus far. I do think it's important to at least get one win out of the next two at home, and head on the road and see what you can do, and see what kind of record you can have on the road. Like last year, this team had just an outstanding road record.
Yeah, and again, I mean, what you said earlier, just in terms of how you believe in, they need a road trip. It's a great way for the guys to bond. All these new players in this team, I think that's one thing that's kind of being understated too, is like this is a very different team than what we had last year. A lot of returning faces, but a lot of newer big names. So, you know, some fancy restaurants, some different hotels, like being forced to spend more time together outside of their comfort zone of their homes in Calgary, I think would do them some good. So, I don't want to overlook the next couple of games, but like you, I want this homestand to be over. And I usually love home games, so.
Me too.
Yeah.
It's time to get on the road, and it's time to just have new scenery and see what happens. But I think a lot of this has been overblown. I'm not too worried about this team. I think this is a good hockey team. I do think it's going to take some time to come together, but these are some really good hockey players. And it, to me, looks like thus far the team seems to be gelling pretty good as a cohesive group. It's just a matter of getting it together in lines and building that chemistry.
Well, and I think this team does have a lot of character, which is what separates them from other teams where I don't feel that's the case, like the Leafs. I mean, their fan base is very dramatic, with all due respect to them, largely because they care so much, but I don't see that roster as having much resiliency or fight for one another or any of those things. So I think Calgary is going to straighten it out. And again, it's really, really early. So I think the fan base has been pretty measured in the responses, but it's funny to watch it like Twitter, like during a game, people are so upset, and I'm one of them at times, depending on what happened.
I'm guilty of it too.
That's just being a fan, but yeah, I don't know. Things are going to get better steadily. I think there's going to be steady improvement game over game. And, you know, we'll see where that takes us.
I still like this roster. I still like it. We're back again next week to talk more Flames hockey talk. Kyle, I'm going to go give this sled hockey try. Hopefully I'm not texting any late night injuries to you, and I promise I'll be back.
I want to hear how it goes. I really do.
And I promise I will be back next week, and Kyle will too. We look forward every week to talk Flames hockey with all of you. Check us out on Twitter at VanLewis14 and at Brad Brood. Till next week, let's get some wins and enjoy watching some Flames hockey.
Take it easy, guys.
Connected. Flames Unfiltered can be found on Twitter at Flame Unfiltered. Check out the Facebook page at Flames Unfiltered. Host Brad Brood is on Twitter at Brad Brood, and host Kyle Lewis is on Twitter at VanLewis14. Like what you hear? Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Flames Unfiltered can be found on all the major podcast players. Want to watch the show? You got it. Check out Inside Edge Hockey Media Group for every show. Subscribe while you watch. Thanks for listening, watching, and interacting. Enjoy the hockey action.
The win comes! Play on! Yeah, baby! Play on! Yeah, baby!
Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. Check back for more action-packed Calgary Flames talk. This episode of Flames Unfiltered was copyrighted and produced by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.